Welcome to the ClearAdmit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, November 9th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. As always, Alex, how are things?
Well, we're heading back into lockdown, Graham. So, extraordinary times continue.
Yeah. And also, as we're recording this, there's not yet a victor in the U.S. election. These are crazy times.
as I said, extraordinary times continue. I mean, it is a crazy world out there right now.
Yeah, definitely. So one thing I'll say, you know, this isn't a politics podcast. And I know our listeners are from all over the world, and some of them may be more interested than others in the U.S. election. But I did want to share like one takeaway that I had, and that is that the polling industry needs a rethink, I feel like, because I did not read many articles predicting things to be this close in the presidential race or even just in general with the Senate races and stuff. So I don't know what's going on, but they don't seem to be able to tap into the pulse of like the everyday American or something. They're missing something. So that's kind of an interesting thing to think about, even for the business world, as you know, surveying customers and understanding public opinion is always big. So anyway, that was just something I've been thinking about as we...
Yeah, maybe they need to look at digital tools and sentiment analysis and all that kind of stuff. But even that would be biased, because you got to reckon one political party shouts more than the other political party or something like that, right? So, I mean, I'm sure it's extremely challenging, but certainly it seems to be a bigger challenge these days to predict accurately.
Yeah, definitely. So what's been going on the NBA front? Because I feel like, you know, we kind of moved through that wave of round one interview invitations and some decisions from the earlier rounds. But what's been going on and what's on tap for this week?
Yeah, things are noticeably quieter, no doubt, on live wire. I mean, we've sort of spent the last several weeks, 2, 3, or 4 weeks, seeing a lot of interview invites coming out. Those are starting to taper off. There are still some schools. I think I saw one from Yale yesterday, and like Haas and Stanford, and a few others still inviting candidates, but it's definitely slowed down. We are actually seeing some interview reports coming into the site, so that's really nice to sort of, you know, see folks they're actually interviewing now, and then, you know, some of them kindly submit as interview reports to help their fellow community members. But yeah, things are quieting down. There's a couple of schools releasing interview invites next week. I know Said, Oxford is one of them. But yeah, it's definitely a quieter time at this point, Graham.
Yeah, that makes sense. This is that ebb and flow that we see every year.
Yeah.
I do think that, I feel like we've stressed this, but I do really encourage people, if you're waiting to interview at a school, prep for it. It's just really important, and get somebody to prep with you, or at least record yourself if you're in lockdown, like Alex and I are,
yeah.
and you know, do it over Zoom, whatever you need to do to practice, because it can be incredibly helpful to hear yourself giving answers to some of these basic interview questions. And the other thing I'll mention is that we have a few podcasts on this. You probably need to go to the website to get at them, because I'm not sure they're all up in, you know, the Apple Podcasts or Spotify, because they're quite old, but they're really relevant. We've got one about common interview questions, one about the hardest questions you might face, and we even have specific school kind of interview guide podcasts for Harvard and for Wharton. So yeah, tune into those as you're prepping, and don't lose sight. You've made it this far. Really important to not kind of drop the ball when it comes to the interview. Other things going on, Alex, we've got Real Humans pieces that continue to roll out on the site. We just released, I guess it was Michigan Ross and Georgetown McDonough Real Humans. So if you're interested in those programs, those are fun to read. As you said, interview reports keep rolling in, and I really encourage everyone to submit interview reports after you've interviewed. Super helpful for your fellow applicants. And we also have that big fall survey going, which is our kind of an applicant survey, just trying to understand how you as an applicant get information, what you look for as you travel through the admissions process. And we really need your help. And you can get at the survey by just going to bit.ly/survey fall 2020. And then the other big news, Alex, is our essay workshops are coming up, and you and I are going to be taking different roles in kind of hosting parts of those events. And we've got a bunch of schools. In fact, I was informed that I think we now have 10 schools in total that are taking part in these two events. So it's going to be a lot of fun. The first event is on November 11th at noon Eastern, and we've got Wharton, Michigan, UT Austin, and Georgetown, as well as, I want to say, Carnegie Mellon. Yeah, so we've got five schools for that first event. We're going to grill them on why they ask the questions they ask in the essay portion of the application and what they're looking for. And then a week later, on November 18th, we're going to do it all over again, but this time with Berkeley, London Business School, INSEAD, Cornell, and UNC. So a great batch of schools. I'm really looking forward to this. And people can sign up for that by going to bit.ly/essay events. So Alex, are you looking forward to this? I think you're going to get to do some of the breakout rooms that we do at the end of those essay workshops where candidates can really have one-on-one time with a given school. And I can't remember which schools you're going to do, but maybe it's a surprise for our listeners. I don't know.
No, I am looking forward to it. I think it's a great concept. And obviously we know that the essay piece of the application is fundamental. I mean, it's really, really important. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think I'm doing breakouts for Georgetown with Shelley and with LBS, which I'm assuming is with David Simpson, but I don't know that for sure.
I think that's right.
But if that's correct, then it'd be good to catch up with colleagues that I've known over quite a long period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and again, our idea with these workshops was just to cut through a lot of the kind of marketing stuff. You know, everyone's been to an info session and learned the basics about a school. But what we wanted to do was, you know, we know people working on round two applications. We wanted to dig a little bit deeper and just get the schools talking about these essay questions and what they're looking for. So sign up for that. I know that those are, there've been a ton of people signing up. So get on that if you're interested. And that's all the news I had this week. I guess we can move into the wiretaps. You did pick out three candidates this week, right? I think I saw those come across here. All right. So let's get going. I just want to make sure I have them teed up here. Here we go. All right, so Wiretaps candidate number one. So this woman is applying to five schools, wants to start next fall, and the schools are Dartmouth, Harvard, MIT, Chicago, and Wharton. She's been working in sales strategy for a tech company, and she'd love to get into consulting with either Bain BCG or McKinsey after business school. GPA is 3.57, 3 years of work experience, currently located on the West Coast of the US, and she mentions that she's targeting a 720 on the GMAT, which she's taking soon. So she hasn't yet taken it. She also shared with us that she attended an Ivy League school where she studied a social science. She does some mentoring at work, but doesn't really do any volunteering outside of that. And her hobbies include, get ready for this, Alex, cheese and candle making. That's not something I've seen before, so that's kind of interesting. And she mentioned that she hasn't done much in the quant domain undergrad-wise. I think she just took an econ class, maybe stats as an undergrad. But she really wants to go off to business school and is kind of worried that her weak quant background and maybe below average extracurriculars could keep her out. So what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really, really interesting. Cheese and candle making. I hope she doesn't get the two ingredient the wrong way around. That could be a bit disastrous. But the key question this candidate had, if I remember correctly, is if she should apply this season or wait another season.
Right.
She's got 3 years of experience, so that's a little bit of a concern. And she also feels that she needs to ratchet up the quant side of her profile. So the answer to that question is quite straightforward, I think, Graham. It's like applied this season. If you don't make it, reapply next season as a reapplicant. Perhaps your chances actually improve versus if you're a first-time applicant anyway. Or at least you're not being biased against because you weren't successful the first time. So I want to make sure that's very clear to our listening audience. Most schools consider reapplicants in the least on par as they consider first-time applicants. But, you know, oftentimes they respect the commitment to come back to it, to improve, to do various things, and so on and so forth. So absolutely, this strategy needs to include applications this season. She also intimated that She's considering or whatever, doing some kind of math prep to overcome potentially more of a social sciences background. And again, absolutely do that. Get the, you know, the MBA math or the HBX core or whatever it is. And even if that's not absolutely completed by the round two deadline, the fact that you're doing it sends a strong signal to the admissions committee. So I would absolutely be looking today at signing up for one of those programs. She's targeting a 720 on the GMAT, so she must be pretty smart, Graham. I mean, again, these GMAT scores are very high these days. I'm just so super glad I'm not applying anymore. But yeah, if she gets a 720 GMAT and the quant side of the GMAT is decent, which it has to be, I guess, with a 720 GMAT, she's got a 357 GPA and does the MBA math or whatever, that side of the application is going to be perfectly fine. If she's got 3 years of experience, she can show some impact at work, then that's going to be fine. Shows really good reason why she wants to go to business school now, to then move on into that sort of more strategy role, going through the consulting in the short term. That should be fine. She has, you know, like you say, quite interesting extracurriculars, even if they're not on the volunteer side. So yeah, Graham, I reckon potentially a pretty strong candidate here.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if this is true, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I think part of the reason you picked this profile is because I feel like there are two really broadly applicable lessons here. The first is that reapplications in business school are not frowned upon. And that's not true in other domains. Like, I think if you're, you know, reapplying to college or even law school, the odds are slim. Whereas for business school, it's actually fairly common. I think that relates to the fact that people are working. And so often they just get another year of work and they reapply, or they can easily kind of move the meter on the stats. And frankly, I know way back when we did some, you know, digging into acceptance rates, and reapplicants get in at a much higher rate than first-timers. So there's no stigma to reapplying. And so because of that, I fully recommend she apply this year. I actually think she's going to get in this year, you know, assuming she can kind of secure the test score that she's promising. And then the other lesson that I think is really useful here is that you don't have to be saving the world to, in terms of extracurriculars, in order to get into business school. I think it's almost more important that you're doing stuff. So, you know, and what I mean by that is that, you know, she's passionate about making cheese, making candles. She is doing some mentoring at work. Like, she's an involved person. This is not a one-dimensional individual. Also, she, you know, kind of social science major. So she's not a kind of, you know, someone who like studied accounting as an undergrad, works in accounting, and, you know, is a, you know, hangs out with fellow CPAs on weekends to study more accounting or something. Like, there's a lot of dimension and interest here in this candidacy. So I just want to stress that you don't have to be spooning out soup for the homeless in order to have kind of an interesting profile. And that's not to say that you know, that doing things for the poor or helping make the world a better place is bad. I'm just saying that you can get into business school with any variety of outside interests. I think the schools are just looking to see that you have, you know, a kind of more than one facet to your character and persona. So that's my take on this candidacy. I think she should absolutely apply, and all your advice is, you know, spot on.
Yeah, I'm going to correct you a little bit there, Graham, because the reason why I picked her is because she said that she loves the podcast.
I knew. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I did miss that. Yes, you're right. Okay. She did say at the end of
And her then note. Obviously it came an opportunity to address these two lessons. But also, you're a good example of that, Graham. When you applied to business school, you ended up being a reapplicant.
That's right.
You ended up in getting admits to two of the very elite schools, and your extracurriculars were singing and playing guitar and running a band, which is very cool stuff. Yeah. But again, you're hardly saving the world doing that.
No, yeah, I guess that's a good point. I mean, I did some other things too, but yeah, no, but that is absolutely true. I applied to business school, rejected across the board except for at a safety school, and then, you know, retook the GMAT, took some outside coursework, basically the equivalent of MBA math type stuff, and, you know, got a better head on my shoulders about my goals, reapplied and ran the table in terms of getting in everywhere. So that was firsthand, absolutely, reapplicants can do it. And I see it time and time again. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this guy, because this is a, he indicates white male, age 30, is applying to six schools. And those include Berkeley, Kellogg, Chicago Booth, UCLA, Wharton, and Yale. He wants to start school next fall. He's been working in production in the video game industry, and he wants to stay in kind of tech after business school, maybe even start his own venture. And his GMAT score is a 720, GPA 3.55, 6 years of work experience, and located also on the West Coast, like our first Wiretaps candidate this week. And he mentioned that, you know, that he's had a lot of promotions throughout his work at a startup. He's been, you know, there for five, I guess, almost 6 years now, and he wears many hats. And his big thing is he's sort of on the fence about, you know, he wants to apply to full-time programs, but he's also considering part-time. And he mentioned that all the programs that I just listed have part-time programs. So he's kind of trying to decide what he wants to do. His long-term goal is to use his knowledge and experience to help found a startup or work at a gaming-focused VC. He also does some mental health volunteering, which he actually did post-undergrad. He took like a year off and volunteered. And he's got some diversity initiatives that he's involved within the gaming industry. So that's kind of this candidate. He's a first-gen college grad, and he knows that his test score isn't sort of stellar. So what do you make of this? I know that we all, I think we both had some back and forth with this candidate on the website, but what's your take?
I think this candidate's a little crazy, Graham, because his test score is not stellar. It's 720. It gets ridiculous, these scores. But, okay, what do I think of this candidate, despite the fact that I shouldn't call someone crazy that does a lot of volunteering in the mental health sphere? I get that. It's a bit of a... a misstep there. But I absolutely love this candidate. I really hope that they refocus their priorities and go deep into the full-time options. Mm-hmm. I think that's what serves this candidate best. I think you reaffirmed that with your feedback.
Yeah.
In fact, the beginning of your feedback was, don't sell yourself short, exclamation point, which is exactly what I think this candidate is doing. I love the industry he's working in. I think it's definitely a high growth industry, you know, online gaming, video and various other things. We know that that's become super popular, perhaps even, you know, through the COVID-19 thing, it's probably gotten more popular. Mm-hmm. So he's in the right industry. It's first generation college. He's a striver. He took a year off after college to explore the mental health domain, doing a lot of volunteer work. I love all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I reckon here we have someone that's perhaps not as familiar with the full-time sort of MBA communities. So maybe they don't have a lot of MBAs around them from the top schools. You know, that's probably why that they're sort of hedging their bets a little bit, because they don't really truly understand the transformative experience that they might get if they go to a top full-time program, mm-hmm. Which I think that they absolutely do belong. I guess they're hedging a little bit, Graham, because they've got 6 years of work experience and you have that extra year out where they were volunteering in the mental health sphere. They're 30 years old, so they reckon, as is conventional wisdom, they're older, so therefore maybe part-time or exec MBA is more their domain. But if they're sort of looking to, you know, maybe make this sort of more transformative move post-MBA and run their own business and do some stuff, maybe it is the full-time option that is by far the better option. They need to just show their fit within each of the individual programs that they apply, which I think they absolutely can do. I mean, you went to Wharton. I spent 7 years working at Wharton. I see someone like this thriving at a place like Wharton's full-time program.
Yeah, and what was interesting, I think this candidate described himself somewhere, I think it was here, as a late bloomer.
I love. I love
often,
that.
Often yes. That profile does well in business school because they've kind of come around to, okay, this is like a second chance for them to like get a ton out of an educational experience. Mm. I feel like I like this candidate. Again, I like the unique industry experience, clear set of goals, the numbers are fine. And he actually plans to, he's thinking about retaking the GMAT because he feels like he can really eke out some additional points on the verbal, which, I mean, if he wants to do that, it can't hurt, obviously. It'll up his chances at the top end of the, you know, school difficulty that he's looking at, you know, the Whartons and stuff. But I like this candidate. I think that, one thing that would be really important is to just make the decision like full-time versus part-time. I think it'd be harder for him to mix and match. And so I would encourage him to just go for full-time. It sounds like that's what he's looking for. I mean, he even spoke about, he really is looking for, you know, kind of an immersive experience. Yeah. And I think that's what the full-time can offer. So yeah, I like this candidate quite a bit too. And I recognize, you know, yeah, he's older. I do wonder how it is that he's 30 because, you know, typically you graduate university at 22. He says he's got 6 years of experience, but maybe he's not counting that year off right. Where he did volunteer work. And so that's probably what it amounts to. And again, it's not that his stats are like off the charts, but I think they're good enough. They're in the ballpark. And so, yeah, the only other thing I wanted to ask you, Alex, is he mentioned, are there other schools that he should be considering to make sure he's kind of casting a wide enough net and, you know, or whether there are just schools that might be good in terms of his goals in tech. And so I gave this some thought. And I also want to note that all the schools on his list are urban centered schools. So I don't know if that was purposeful, but as a result, I was kind of reluctant to add schools to the list that would be in a kind of rural location, because I wasn't sure if he like purposely wants to be in a city. But schools that came to my mind, and I tried to go on all ends of the spectrum here, were USC Marshall, which is in LA. He's also, I think he's got UCLA on the list. And I was thinking about some of the placements into tech and things that might be useful if he's going to go back into video stuff. Gaming stuff. I had Georgetown on the list just with the idea. There's actually quite a bit of tech stuff happening in DC. I had Foster on the list as well. And then I had MIT and kind of a wild card, Cornell Tech, which is a one-year MBA in New York City offered by Cornell with a focus on tech stuff. So I don't know if you had given this piece of it any thought, but since he was asking, I just wanted to kind of throw those out there.
Yeah, I mean, I thought a little bit about Sloan, obviously. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, as a comparable school in terms of where they're targeting, Sloan came to mind. I also thought of Ross.
Oh yeah,
as a good, you know, a potential candidate. So yeah, I mean, I think the schools that you mentioned are absolutely appropriate, but I would also toss in Ross, I think.
Yeah, and if I were this candidate, I would spend some time looking at all these programs, and then, I mean, I'm not suggesting that he apply to all of them, but I just, you know, if he wants to have a good kind of list of, right now, I would say the list is fairly top heavy. I mean, he's got, you know, a lot of really top schools, you know, a few M7 type schools. Berkeley's right on the cusp of that too. So he's got some really competitive schools, and it occurred to me that as much as I like the candidacy and think he's going to do a great job, I would prefer to see a portfolio that's a little bit more balanced maybe. And so I would investigate some of these other schools and see if anything kind of resonates as he does that research.
No, I think that's fair enough. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person has 8 schools on the target list. They are Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, LBS, MIT, NYU, and Yale. They're going to try to start this coming fall, so 2021. They've been working in Big Four financial services, and they want to get into investment banking. So companies that they're targeting include Citibank, Credit Suisse, JP Morgan. GRE score is a 320. GPA is a 3.7. And this candidate has 4 years of work experience, is located in New York and hoping to stay there. They indicate in their notes that they are an overrepresented male. They've been in New York for like 7 years now, which includes attending a top 15 undergraduate institution, as well as their work experience. The big thing here, Alex, that I wanted to get your take on is they indicate that they applied to some of these schools already. So they applied to Columbia early decision, and they were rejected after interview. MIT, they applied round one, rejected outright. Stern and Yale still waiting, and they're thinking about Duke, Tuck, and Cornell for round two. So I know you had some dialogue with this candidate, and I was curious to get your take on like what they should be doing now and what may have gone wrong.
Yeah, and this is kind of why I chose this candidate. So here we have a candidate who's applied round one and is now sort of thinking about his round two strategy based on the early signals that they're receiving in round one. Those signals being they were invited to interview at Columbia, but then were rejected. They weren't invited to interview at Sloan. So where does that sort of land them? They're still waiting in terms of an interview invite from Yale.
That's not good news.
So that's getting a little bit later in the process for them. I mean, it doesn't mean to say that they won't get that invite, but I think we're heading towards the end of that time frame.
Yeah.
So they're waiting for interview invite at Stern. Well, you know, that might come in February, but who knows with Stern?
Yeah,
I mean, I hate to say it, but yeah. Stern's process is a little bit of a mystery to me.
Yeah.
So what have they got to do? So round two, they're considering Duke Top Cornell, which I think is very good. I think those, you know, those are sort of programs that this person should be looking at. And also, they actually got an interview at LBS, and they think the interview went quite well. But targeting Duke Top Cornell round two, I mean, quite frankly, Graham, if they want to do investment banking in New York, a program like Cornell is probably a great fit anyway, versus, let's say, LBS, which I think LBS is obviously a brilliant investment banking option. But, you know, perhaps it is better suited for folks that want to work in London or other parts of Europe than coming back to New York, although the person did respond that New York's recruiting from London Business School is actually okay for US citizens. So that's good that they've sort of thought that through and looked into it. So why is this? So you know, I think that they're making the right sort of decisions for round two. But the question becomes, why are they not being successful thus far in round one? And, you know, if you get an interview invite at Columbia early decision, I think that's a reasonably positive signal at that point, obviously. And obviously then they're not successful through the invite. So what's happening here? And to me, what stands out are two things. One is, again, this sort of overrepresented, you know, white male living in New York City or whatever, this idea that, all right, because I'm overrepresented, some part of my application really needs to stand out so that I'm not sort of pigeonholed into whatever category it is. And the 320 GRE, which is kind of odd to me, Graham, that the GRE score is at 320. There's no improvement there yet. They're going into investment banking. They've worked in Big Four. They got a 3.7, I imagine, from a pretty sort of finance-oriented sort of undergrad degree. So it seems like it's a weird score to me why there's not more improvement there. They're doing HBS core or they've done it. They're trying to, yeah, they've got a quant undergrad. So they're trying to show that the GRE score is an anomaly. But I just wonder why the GRE score is at 320, because clearly that does appear to be the weakest link here.
Agreed. And I think, so they mentioned they attended a top 15 undergrad in New York. So I'm assuming they went to NYU or maybe Columbia, although they probably would have said they went to an Ivy League if they were, you know, had done Columbia or something. But anyway, so they went to a good school, great GPA, but that test score does stand out. And they did mention in the notes that they have taken the GMAT three times, but did not do well. And they had really poor verbal scores. So they shifted over to take the GRE and landed a 320, and that's where things stand. And a 320 is kind of within spitting distance for some of these schools on their list, but it's not, you know, it's below average and it does jump out. So I kind of spent some time thinking about this, and, you know, there's some conflicting kind of data points here for me. So on the one hand, they mentioned they speak four languages. And so I say, wow, that, you know, that's kind of interesting. And this person should be kind of a whiz bang with verbal stuff. But then they didn't do well on the GMAT verbal. And I don't know, but presumably the GRE has gone a similar route. So that's kind of conflicting. And I wondered if a school looking at this profile would say, sure, overrepresented, okay. But then they might also say, oh, good with numbers, not with people. You know, if the verbal scores are low, all the work has been kind of fairly quant-oriented, the undergrad experience as well. So I wondered if there was some of that happening. It's just hard to know. But I do feel that, you're right, getting an interview invite at Columbia is a positive sign. And it doesn't surprise me that someone could be invited to interview at Columbia and then rejected outright at MIT, because those schools use a pretty different process in terms of MIT makes a pretty steep cut, interviewing far fewer candidates than Columbia does, right? So we're getting a feel for where this person, you know, sits. They got the interview at LBS. Yale, hard to say at this point, but it's getting later and later, so they may not make the cut there. It's a tough case, and I don't know that they really have time to retake a test, but it's, you know, it's good that they're looking at some round two schools. I do think that if LBS works out, I mean, LBS likes Americans. They're always interested in getting candidates from the U.S., and I agree with this candidate's assessment. They did some research, and, you know, if you're an American at LBS and you want to come back to the U.S. and work, that's easy. The trouble is when you're, you know, a Brazilian at LBS and want to land in the U.S. Right. or something, or if you, you know, it's always easiest to go back to a home market where you're, have a passport. It's just so much easier to get a job, right, because there's no working papers. So, yeah, so my take is that I think they obviously, hopefully things go well with LBS. Maybe they'll get an invite from Stern down the road here. And I would absolutely throw in, you know, the schools that they're thinking of for round two, because I don't have a signal that they can afford to sit back and relax at this point.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, it's a shame we don't really have anything prescriptive here to offer to say, well, if you do X, Y, and Z, you'll get over the hump. This is a difficult case. If we are assuming that the GRE score is not going to budge up, and it is the weakest link of the profile, then, you know, the adjustment in terms of round two is target a tier below the tier that you've been targeting in round one, which seems to be for the most part what they're doing. If they're successful at LBS, that's fantastic. If they're successful at one of Cornell, Tuck, and Duke, they're going to have opportunities to do investment banking in New York City. So,
sure.
So that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, agreed. So here we go again. We've been through our three wiretaps candidates. And if you're listening, you've just spent 30 minutes or so with us that you could have spent prepping for your interviews. But hopefully there was a couple of kernels of wisdom here to help you along the way. Alex, thanks for picking these out. We'll be back in a week with another episode. And I did want to mention, we've got a couple of, I've been doing a couple of side episodes. I've got a really interesting one coming up with Stacey Blackman from Stacey Blackman Consulting. And I got into a really interesting discussion with her about her time at Kellogg and undergrad at Penn and how she went about starting. She's actually started and sold a couple of businesses. So really interesting, not just about MBA admissions, but about, you know, being a female entrepreneur and everything else. And then we've got another episode coming up with some really interesting stuff about post-MBA career outcomes. So stay tuned for that stuff. Please continue to rate and review this podcast. And yeah, Alex, I'll see you in a week's time. Thanks for all your help on this.
Everybody, stay safe. Best of luck.